Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Jason McKee. Y'all already know what's going down on this one, man. Got to talk about Tez's interview that we saw with him and Chris Long. Dropped some gems on there. I mean, let's be real. He basically... Hey, you know he got a phone call from Ryan after that mug, bro. Because he basically said, y'all know who we drafting. And then he was like, let me stop playing.
Tez, I know you're there. Yeah, Brian Poles left him a message. He left him a message on his voicemail. Like, hey, you know we can't do that, man. You know we can't do that.
But Ryan, we know who we drafting. Hey, man. He talked about winning over the locker room, being a rookie QB, so we got to break down some of those things as well. Some excitement around his defense as well, touching on that. And then a mental hurdle that the Bears have had to deal with and how important it actually is to overcome it. We'll talk about all that more on today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. J-Mac, where we at in the offseason, brother? Where we at with the whole everybody going to college, signing with teams? Where we at right now, J-Mac?
Yeah, man, it's just we're still in our offseason phase. So Mondays and Wednesdays, we have morning workouts. You know, all our agility and conditioning goes in the morning. So we're at 6 a.m., and then in the afternoon, Monday through Thursday, we lift 3:30 to about 4:30. So it's been good, man. Kids have been getting after it. Kids have been getting bigger, faster, and stronger. Our kids are actually, you know, they put themselves in a 7-on-7 league on Sundays. So they play, you know, a lot of different high schools. They have teams that enter the 7-on-7 league. So last week was our first game. I had the opportunity to watch the kids go out. I watched them. They got to go out there and coach themselves. But it's good because, you know, here in Chicago – or not even Chicago, Illinois, we don't have spring football. Yeah, you know, back home in Florida and a lot of states in the South. And I think even, if I'm not mistaken, I want to say Indiana, I think they have spring ball. But up here, we don't have that in our state. So, you know, the way coaches get around it or the way guys get extra reps is through playing 7-on-7, which isn't necessarily real football, but it's the only way that kids can get extra reps. So it was good to go out there Sunday to watch our kids coach themselves and, you know, try to teach themselves new schemes and stuff like that we're implementing on offense and on defense. And they perform well. Got a chance to look at some of the young guys to go out there and play that we're going to count on this year. So it's been a good start, man. But as you know, Pat, it ain't how you start. It's how you finish. And, you know, we want to continue building. We don't want to peak too early. We want to peak at the right time. And that's when we kick off on Friday nights.
Hey, man, or you just win all the games. You just peak the entire way. You know what I mean? I mean, that's always an option.
Yeah, it's a challenge, man. Like we're in such a tough conference, as you know, Pat. You came out, man, and
oh yeah,
you know, we're thankful that you came out to a game and watched us play. And we're in such a tough conference. A lot of great coaches, a lot of great teams with tradition, a lot of great competition. So in our league, the Catholic Conference is the premier conference in the state, and it's every weekend is a playoff game. So you're always trying to gain a competitive edge. Last Friday, I had the opportunity to go out to Northwestern, and Northwestern invited all the head coaches from all the high schools out. And, you know, we got to go in there and talk to Coach Braun and see what they're doing. A lot of presentations and demos in terms of drills, and got to see what Northwestern was about. But we also got the fellowship and also, you know, try to gain an advantage in terms of coaching development. So, you know, all the coaches were there. You think there's going to be a coach that ain't going to show up? Well, guess what? Your competitor is going to be there because he knows you're going to be there. And he's like, hey, I'm not letting J-Mac and that staff, you know, get ahead of us. So it's been good, man. It's been full speed ahead, and I've been pleased to where we're at.
Hey, man, when you take all the good that you can from Northwestern, you leave the other stuff over there, though. Don't you? We don't need none of that. Hey, Carmel, I don't need no host of the Chicago Bears podcast caught in a wild scandal. Now, wait a minute. Hey,
Coach Braun, to his credit, man, Coach Braun, he's got a tremendous staff, man. I think he's done a good job of hiring the right people to really turn that thing around. But not only to turn it around, to really reemphasize discipline in that program. And that was one of the things that he really harped on when we were there is discipline. You know, not overlooking the little things, but not only the coaches installing that discipline, having the right players with the right mindset that can instill that discipline on a daily basis. So he said it's to the point now to where the players, they don't put up with anything. And they've really taken ownership of that team. So, man, I'm excited to see what they're going to do in the Big Ten this year.
Man, it's going to be interesting because Lord knows the Big Ten football is I mean, Michigan, I guess. Yeah, Michigan. That's kind of just what you look at. You just go, oh, we got one. You know what I mean? But Illinois
you got B1, though.
Football, I should say. Yeah, hey, you got the biggest one. I guess that's what counts. You know what I mean? But Illinois Big Ten football, boy. Y'all know I'm diehard Illini, boy. I watch a lot of Notre Dame, though. That's what I say. Hey, man, let's talk about some of the dynamics, though, that maybe you see in that college locker room that can transfer over to the pros, because we got some very interesting conversation around one. Let's stop. Let's not sidestep it like Tej tried to do after putting his foot in his mouth. We're talking about Caleb Williams coming into that locker room. In an interview with Chris Long, he talked about what he can do to win over the locker room. And a quote from that, he said, be yourself. Don't try and do it all overnight. Just stay humble. Don't try and do it all by yourself. You have a great group of guys around you. And I thought that this is a very apt quote, because there's a lot being put on Caleb Williams' shoulders. There's a lot that's being put on this first season for him because of the team that's been built for him to come into. You've seen a lot of guys come in and out of the locker room. I'm sure you've seen both sides of this, where you see the guys that are doing too much and you see the guys that just come in and they're looking to keep their heads down and work. How is it perceived in the locker room one way or the other when you see kind of the different personalities coming in and trying to win guys over?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is, as a veteran in a locker room, you have a highly touted rookie coming in, especially at the quarterback position. You want to see, you're going to evaluate him. Everybody's going to evaluate, you know, what type of person he is, you know, what his personality is like. Does he act like just one of the guys, or is he trying to put himself on a pedestal? And, you know, when Montez, I watched that interview as well, and when Montez said, hey, just be yourself. Well, here's the thing I would say, you know, and I'm not throwing stuff out there with Caleb. You know, we've heard all the rumors and stuff like that. But if you're a guy, right, that's used to getting all the attention, and you're a guy who places yourself on a pedestal, and that's who you are, well, I think you're gonna have to change that for sure. Because at the end of the day, like us as veterans in a locker room, like, we understand that you're the first pick in the draft. We understand that you are, quote unquote, supposed to be the anointed one to help turn this thing around offensively and in terms of the quarterback position. But at the same time, you have to carry yourself as one of the guys. And I'll go into more in depth with that. It is, you know, in terms of, you know, you doing what the guys do, and that's in the locker room. That's if the guys are getting together outside of the locker room. Hey, we're going bowling today. We invite you. You can't say, oh, I'm too busy, because guess what? That perception is going to be, oh, he's blowing us off. You know what I'm saying? Like, that stuff's really the what goes on in the locker room, in that building, is just as important as what goes on outside of the building in terms of team bonding, you know, building chemistry and stuff like that. So, you know, when it comes to that, he's got to go in there. He's got to be the hardest working. We hear the same thing. First one in, last one out. Yes, you got to do that, but you got to do more, right? You got to go in there and show the guys that you're just one of the guys. You're ready to get down and dirty with whatever we got to do. You know, you're the first one out there in line for conditioning. You know what I'm saying? You got to be that bona fide leader. And guys will see right through you if it's an act, but you have to embody that. You've got to live and breathe that. And, you know, like I said before, if he does that, he goes out there, puts his head down and works, and he really establishes himself as one of the guys where you're going to earn the respect of those veterans in that locker room. And you got a lot of great players in that locker room already. A lot of guys who played a lot of high level of football, guys who have a lot of different accolades, guys who have just signed contracts, guys who had ties to Justin Fields, like we've talked about, Pat. You know, there's some guys that didn't want Justin to be out of that locker room. So you've got to win them over. And how you do it? By working hard, remaining humble, showing them that you're just one of the guys, but also showing them that you're willing to do whatever it takes to help this team win, but also to accelerate your personal development to help this team be effective on offense and help this team win as well.
How's it perceived if a guy comes in with the, I guess not to say cockiness, but the confidence of what he's coming there to do, and he has a confidence that he's going to get it done, right? I remember hearing Shaq talk about when he got drafted to Orlando and they tried to do the whole rookie hazing thing to him, and he was like, y'all won 13 games last year. You're not going to haze me because I'm here to change the trajectory of this franchise. Now, that's an NBA locker room that's 18 guys versus an NFL locker room that has you know, 53. Yeah. How is that kind of perceived? Because I don't know if we won't see that from Caleb, and I don't know if I view that as a bad thing, but I know that there's people in the locker room that it may not sit that way with.
Yeah, I understand. Like, it's one thing to come in and you're cocky because you're confident in your abilities.
Yeah.
You're cocky because you're confident in your preparation. You're cocky because you're confident in the work that you put in.
Exactly.
I think it's displaying those things, right? But not in a cocky way. You know, not going out here and walking around that facility, you know, walking past guys, not saying hello when you walk in, you know, not trying to, you know, spark up conversations with guys in that locker room, you know, whether you're the starting receiver or whether you're your fifth string receiver. Like, he has to treat everybody the same with respect, and he has to try to build a relationship with everybody, because all eyes are on you. You know, you're going to be the focal point of this team. You're the number one pick. You're anointed to be the franchise quarterback, and everybody's going to be evaluating you, from the players, you know, from the coaches still are going to continue to evaluate you, even though you are, you know, in the organization now. But, you know, everybody's going to have all eyes on you. So you've got to go in and win that building. You know, you got to win the strength coaches. You've got to win over the people that's the nutritionists and all that stuff. You got to win over, you know, everybody in the entire building, the equipment managers. You've got to win these guys over. And how you win them over? By, you know, being one of the guys, working hard, but also, yes, you can be confident because you're prepared. And if you go out there, hey, and, you know, you're practicing hard, you're making plays, you're celebrating with your guys, when you're in the media, when you're talking to us and other people in the media, it can't be about you. It's about this team. Yeah. It's about what we plan on doing moving forward. You know, it's always got to be we and not me. And if you have that type of attitude, well, then you can win over the locker room. But here's the thing. You win over that locker room even faster if you go out there, you know, during the season and, you know, you have a high rate of success. If you're out there making plays.
Absolutely.
And you're doing the things that we envision you doing, well, guess what? You're going to win the locker room over even faster because you're out there making plays and you're doing what we expected you to do when we drafted you.
And that's exactly what I mean, right? Like, Shaq didn't come in and he was just disrespectful to guys, but he just kind of, he talked about it. He was like, listen, I'm not carrying y'all bags. I'm not sitting here running to get y'all no donuts. I'm not like, I'm the face of the franchise. I don't know how to tell y'all this. And guess what? We're going to go out here and we're going to dominate. We're going to go out here and we're going to win. And he proved to be a dominant force his first year. I think that we could see that kind of confidence in Caleb. And I call it confidence and not cockiness, because a lot of people perceive things as cocky based on whether they like the person or not. A lot of people can perceive Pat Mahomes as cocky if you watch that quarterback documentary, right? Because he knows what he's supposed to do. He knows how he's supposed to play, and he's going to go out there and he's going to make that play. And he's going to sit there. And if you talk trash to him, oh, guess what? Who are you? You want to do this? Let's do it. Yeah, I mean, I'm with it. Like, and I think a lot of people will perceive that as cockiness, but I think Caleb comes in with a confidence of, I'm going to study more than you're going to do. I'm going to play harder than you're going to play. I'm going to know exactly what I need to do in this playbook so that I can go out there and put my team in the best position to win. And I think that that's something that, if there is a little bit of, I don't even think there's animosity. I think everybody's professional. They're going to come in. But if there is a little bit of like, Justin was my guy, you better be amazing.
Yeah.
Maybe you can view that as, oh, this kid too cocky. We got to knock him down a peg.
Yeah, but I think, okay, going back to, you know, what you're saying, getting the donuts, right? That's a rookie thing. Getting, like, you know, we used to have to get the donuts and we used to have to get Popeyes. Like, Popeyes was like the two things. Like, it was a donuts for breakfast, or, you know, on
the wings hitting right now. Saturday, Popeyes.
Yeah, man. Like, on Saturdays before the walkthrough, you had to have the donuts. And then, you know, on the team bus or on the way to the plane, you had to have Popeyes chicken. So I think if you come in, right, and that's been the ritual, you know, for every rookie in that room that you're in. So if you come in, you say, hey, I'm not doing that. Well, then you're not going to. I mean, that's the first strike right there. Like, right. You've got to do that. All the quarterbacks before you have done that, all the running backs have done that before you. Like, you have to do that. Like, you know, when Matt Forte came in as a rookie and, you know, we have our rookie dinner, but Matt, you got to get the donuts, you got to get a chicken and stuff like that. Matt was like, hey, I'm doing it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But at the same time, the way he earned our respect is, right, he did the things that were routine for a rookie to do in terms of, you know, doing those things like I just discussed. But also, like, he earned the respect of us because he picked up the playbook so fast. And our running back coach, Tim Spencer, threw a lot at him. And Matt just knew it. He knew the protections. He knew where he was supposed to be. He was even correcting other veterans in the room on where they should be, on where they should be going, you know, in terms of whatever play was being called. So we respected him because we said, you know what, this dude is professional already. Like, he's mature. Like, he's here to contribute. He's here to be that back that they drafted him to be in the second round. And he earned our respect. And, you know, I think if Caleb has that type of mentality, and he has to, because you're the quarterback. So it's a new system. And the good thing is everybody's going to be learning a new system. So he's not going to come in and it's going to be a learning curve for everybody. But the faster he picks it up and the faster he can help be a multiplier and help, you know, correct guys when they're wrong, or, you know, help coach them receivers up on the timing he wants these routes, you know, the depth that he wants these routes being ran at, and have these discussions with the offensive line and get on the same page with the running backs in terms of this scheme. Like, they're going to earn respect because they know, hey, this kid is really bought in. This kid is about his business. But at the same time, you've got to do the things that rookies are required to do. If not, you'll lose them.
Yeah, I think that's interesting too, right? Like, he basically has to come in and tell veterans that have been two locked in veterans. I'm talking about what, DJ Moore 7 years, Keenan Allen 11 years at the, coming into this season. You got to tell them, don't run the route like that. You got to run it this way so I can get this to you. You got to come in with a confidence of, like, I know that I'm going to be on this. I know what I'm doing. I know that we got to do this to make this play. We got to figure out how we work together.
Yep.
Not how I know this, how you've been doing it. But if you do it like this, I'm going to be able to get you this ball like this. And I think that there's a level of, I mean, he's a 23-year-old kid. Like, you coming in and telling grown men, like, hey, I know you've been doing this for 11 years, but, like, let's tweak this a little bit. That confidence has to be there for him to have success on the field with this team.
Yeah, and it's the way you have those conversations. You know what I mean? There's no way he can go up to a Keenan Allen and say, hey, I want you to run the post route like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, that ain't going to work. You know what I mean? First of all, you have never ran a post route. You've only run a post route. Second of all, you're talking to a guy who's had a tremendous amount of success in this league. You know what I'm saying? Who you should be, you know, you got to be doing backflips to have, because he's going to really accelerate your development, because he is a receiver that's going to get open, that's quarterback friendly, and they can do the things that you need him to do from a receiver standpoint. So it's the way you have those conversations, you know what I mean, with him and DJ and the rest of the receiving core. You know, you get in a room and say, hey, you know, Keenan, how are you thinking about running this post route when we run this concept? DJ, how do you like running this slant route? Okay, yep, Coach Waldron wants us to run it like this. Well, let's get together. Let's work on our timing. Like, you've got to be bought in together. You can't demand and say, hey, DJ Moore, run the slant route at 3 yards. You know what I'm saying? Like, that ain't going to work. That ain't going to work with these veterans.
Hey, he can pull that off with Tyler Scott. Like, you ain't catching the balls last year for me to worry about what you
did. Yeah, he's got to earn it, man. You ain't in the USC locker room. You're in the Chicago Bears locker room that you have two veteran receivers, two Pro Bowl receivers that just had, you know, each one of them coming off their best season in the league. So, you know, you got to be excited to have those guys, but you got to have, when you have those conversations with those guys, make sure that you're toeing the line of respect and make sure they understand that, hey, I'm working with you guys and I'm not telling you guys what to do.
And that's right. Like, a lot of people think leadership is, you know, being the boss, telling people where to go, how to move. And really it's, you know, figuring out how to make the people want to do the best for you, how to work the best for you, how to get the best out of everybody that's in that locker room. And I think, you know, when you talk about a young kid coming in with a ton of veterans, he's going to have a ton of experience to lean on. But it is still, you have to have that tone, especially when you're in the huddle, right? Like, hey, you know, let's lock it up. Let's get in. It was something that Justin was commended for. It was something that Mitch was commended for, right? Kyle Long commends Mitch all the time on that. You had a young guy come in, he had been in the league a couple years, but I mean, Rex, when he got started, did y'all get that feeling when he came into the huddle, when he kind of like started actually getting to be under center for the entire season? Did you get that feeling from Rex of like, hey, listen, we got to lock in. We got to make sure that we're doing this. And he gave you that leadership vibe.
Yeah, like Rex was real respected because he came in like one of the guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there were a lot of times in which, you know, on Monday nights, if we weren't playing, you know, we were watching the Monday Night Football game over Rex's house. You know, Rex was always inviting people to do things. And And that really earned the respect from, I think, a lot of guys. But Rex knew his stuff. You know what I mean? He knew what he was supposed to be doing. He was able to correct guys, you know, in a way to where he wasn't demanding you to do things. He was correcting you to make sure that, you know, everybody was on the same page. And that way, you know, our offense was running smoothly. So I think that's the way Rex, you know, gained his respect. Plus, you know, come out of Florida, he was a highly touted player that had a lot of success. And, you know, he came in and guys knew he could play. But at the same time, he had a way of, you know, bonding with the guys. He was just one of the guys. He never put himself on a pedestal and stuff like that. So I think guys really respected him. And then you look at all the injuries that he went through, like guys respected the way that he fought back from all the adversity that he faced. And even when he was facing that adversity, right, it never casted a shadow on the team because he was always trying to work to get back to help the team. And even when he was on the sideline and he wasn't in the game, you know, he was helping the Kyle Orton. He was helping whatever quarterback was in the huddle to help them be successful, even though he wasn't the one out there, you know, distributing that football to those receivers or the one actually taking those snaps. He was still a team player. And if you have somebody like that who cares about the team's success more than their own, well, then you have something special. And, you know, talking about all them quarterbacks, Pat, I looked up something, and it was on ESPN.com. I don't know if you saw it, but talking about, you know, the Bears drafted they drafted in the first round quarterback six times, right?
Yeah.
So Justin Fields in 2021, 10-28 record. He was there for three seasons. Mitch Trubisky, second overall pick in 2017. He was 29-21 in four seasons. Rex Grossman, who we're talking about, he was drafted in 2003, 22nd overall pick, 19-12, six seasons with the Bears. Cade McNown, the number 12 pick, Pat, 1999, he was 3-12, two seasons, bro. Jim Harbaugh, Coach Harbs, the 26th overall pick back in 1987, he was 35-30, seven seasons with the Bears. And then Jim McMahon, the fifth overall pick in 1982, he was 46-15. But you look at it, okay, so you look at those, the wins and losses, right? Yeah. Some guys had more success than others, but I mean, look at a McMahon. Look what he had around him, right? And I'll talk about McMahon because I'm not saying that the situation Caleb is coming into is just like what McMahon had, especially with the 85 Bears, because, no, that defense is one of a kind.
You knew you was getting the ball back.
Right. But you look at what he had around him. Jim had the best running back, arguably, of all time.
Yeah.
He had one of the greatest defenses of all time.
Yeah.
And he was coming into a situation, right, that was tailor-made for a quarterback to not have to shoulder the load of being successful. And I look at this team, right, I look at it as saying, hey, yes, Caleb's going to be the first overall pick. Is he going to have to carry a load? Yeah, because the expectations are going to be sky high. But at the same time, he doesn't have to do everything by himself like he had to do last year at USC, because you have a great defense. You have two great receivers. You have a great tight end. You have a good collection of running backs. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
You know, I think, is the weight of the world going to be on his shoulders? Yes, because Chicago is obviously, you know, we're going to be on them. We're going to evaluate
them.
Yeah. But at the same time, lean on the guys in the locker room. And that's why it's so important for him to win that locker room, because you're going to have to count on these guys to make plays. These guys are going to be vital to your success. So if you come in on a pedestal, they're not going to want to play for you. But if you show them that you're them and you do anything for these guys, guess what? They'll run through a wall for you.
I think Jim is such an interesting one. Jim McMahon is such an interesting one to bring up because, right, like, you see the team that he had around him. But he did come in with a swag. He did come in with a confidence, some would say, and especially back in the 80s when football was, yes, sir, I'm on the field and I will play. I will run through that wall for you. Anything that you need from me, sir, you've got it. Jim McMahon show up first day. He got a half a thing, a six pack, and the side, he pull out, you know, he got a, you know what I mean? The plunky QB, hey, what's good? I'm in this month. Let's play some football. Sitting there, Ditka's calling the screen pass. He see Galt down the sideline. I'm letting it fly. You know what I mean? Like there was a some would say, I think even Mike probably would have said that first year, a cockiness to Harbaugh. But the team respected him. The team, you know, they understood that there's a confidence in this kid that's going to help us get to the ultimate goal. It does help when you have Walter Payton behind you. But there's a confidence in this kid.
He was one of the guys. I mean, look at the guys on that team on the defense. Look how many wild guys they had on that team, right?
he fit in
like one of the guys. And you know, if you fit in like one of the guys, you're out there making plays. Well, guess what? Respect is earned. You're one of us. You've earned rite of passage. You know what I'm saying? Like it's – and that's the way it's got to be. So, you know, Caleb, yeah, you know, coming in here and do you change your personality? No, you be you. But at the same time, you know, if you're used to – you know, you're out there in SoCal and you're used to, you know, people bowing at your feet. Well, guess what? This is a whole new deal. You know, this is the NFL locker room. There's guys making a lot of money here, just like you were making a lot of money in Southern Cal on NIL deals. But guess what? You better earn the respect of those guys in that locker room if you want them to play hard for you.
I mean, listen, when you come up to, who was it? I think it was Mongo. When you come up to Mongo and headbutt him with his helmet on. Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. And they just start looking around. This dude's nuts. Like, yeah. He might fit in here. I love it, though. I think that the Bears are set up. And it's something, as Chicago, I don't think we like it, right? You don't like somebody who understands their star. You want them to grow into their star. We love Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler became a star because he was very hardworking. But then when he figured out he was a star, Chicago was kind of like, hey, yo. Hey, you got to calm down a little bit, man. Put your head down. You go to work. You get the job done. You focus too much on the star.
Yep.
We deserve a star, right? Michael Jordan knew who Michael Jordan was. You know what I mean? Frank Thomas knew who Frank Thomas was. Walter Payton knew who Walter Payton was. Yes, these were guys that kept their heads down and did the work. But don't ever confuse the fact that they knew what they could do when they got on to their respective fields and or courts. And I think that that is something, that is a swagger that the Chicago Bears have been missing. I mean, my God, for how long? I mean, I can't even say it's been here at the quarterback position since McMahon. I mean, like, honestly, since McMahon, no disrespect to Rex, no disrespect to Jay, but like, McMahon knew what he was going to go out on that field and do, and he just went and did it. And I don't think that we've had that here in Chicago. I talked about this yesterday with Courtney, and me and Abdallah talked about it over Friday. You know, since I've been alive, J-Mac, I have never seen a quarterback that the Chicago Bears have drafted get a second contract. Like, that tells you what's been here, the confidence that we've had at that position. Now, Jay had all the confidence in the world, but it just always didn't work out in our favor, and Jay also had the most unprotected backside in the NFL. Yeah, I mean, so I think that there's when you start to pair things up, you take the confidence, you take what Ryan Poles is putting together here and how confident he is about building this team. I don't think it comes off as cockiness. I think that helps him win over the locker room. And I think that we're set up for a rookie year of excitement from this guy on the offensive side. And I'm really looking forward to it.
I hope so, because I mean, you look at it there. I mean, you're the guy. You come here, you're the guy, and we built a great infrastructure around you. We put together, you know, we had a good defense that'll hopefully take another step this year with guys. You know, I mean, look at it like this, right? You look at the defense and you look at Montez Sweat pretty much going into a second year here. I mean, he got here half the season. Javon Dexter, Pickens, a lot of guys, Tyree Stevenson, you know, a lot of guys going, Terrell Smith, getting, you know, building on their rookie seasons here in Chicago. And I know Montez isn't a rookie, but he was a rookie last year in Chicago. So it's going to be exciting.
You getting no donuts.
Yeah, he wouldn't. I ain't getting no donuts. His bank account got a lot of donuts, a lot of zeros. Hey,
bank account got some good donuts in it.
Krispy Kreme bank account, baby. but it's exciting because, like, you know, we talked about Caleb Bright. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, you can't come in here on a pedestal because guess what? No. We understand what you did at USC. You're a Heisman Trophy winner. You put together some crazy numbers. You're arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play at USC. They've had a lot of them that have played well at USC. But let's look at it like this. What quarterbacks from USC have came in the league and had success? Just one, mainly the one from Cincinnati. That's it.
I was gonna say.
That's it. I mean, that's it. And at the end of the day, as Bears fans, like, you know, I personally, like, we care what you did at USC because it got you here in Chicago. But at the end of the day, we don't care because what are you going to do for the Bears? What are you going to do for this team? What are you going to do for this offense? You know, how are you going to finally, you know, transform this position, something that we haven't gotten right for a long time. You know what I mean? So that's what we care about. And, you know, to me, the biggest, the most important coach in the building is Kerry Joseph, the quarterback coach.
Yeah.
Because he's going to spend the most time around Caleb or whatever quarterback they draft. But he's also going to be, you know, solely responsible for his development. You know, yes, Shane Waldron is going to have to put together an offense that can, you know, extenuate his abilities and you know, make sure that, you know, he's, like we said, make sure he's protected. You put together a protection scheme with the offensive line and make sure that, you know, he has time to get the ball out and stuff like that. But at the same time, the development, a lot of the development is going to fall on Kerry Joseph. You know, can you help develop this quarterback? Can you help make his game translate from the collegiate level to the NFL level? Like, you're going to be solely responsible for making them successful. So it's a lot of weight on Kerry Joseph as well. Like, that relationship has got a bond as well. It has to bond. It has to work. You know, so there's a lot of factors that go into, you know, him being successful. It's not all on him. A lot of it's on, you know, the coaches, and in particular his quarterback coach, making sure that he's prepared and making sure when he hits that football field, he's doing the things that we envision him doing, you know, that made him the number one overall pick, if it happens.
Hey, this, yeah, if it happens. Yeah, that's what Ted said. If it happens, we'll see what happens. dang, bro. Hey, you made me go back and look at the list of USC quarterback. Wow.
Yeah. Who's it? Palmer's the only one, right? Palmer?
I mean.
And that's bad. I know.
Vince Evans didn't work out. We know that for sure.
Right. Palmer was the only one in Cincinnati.
Carson,
right?
Palmer.
That's it. Come on, man.
Matt Leinart. Hey, y'all know Matt Leinart well.
I mean, it's not a shot. You know, it's not a shot. It's just when you look at
Matt Barkley, dog. We had Big Bark. Yeah, I mean.
But look at the quarterback list, right? Of coaches, I mean, of quarterbacks coming out of USC, not having a high level of success. You look at the Bears' first round draft picks. You know, not necessarily having a high rate of success, right?
Yeah.
You know, Jim McMahon, Harbaugh had some success here, but I mean, look at the guys like Mitch, and now you have to do it, Justin, unfortunately, because of the win loss record and stuff like that. Like, it's the cards are stacked against him. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, you know, it's up to a lot of people in that building to make sure that he's not the next person in line to be on that list. And it's on him, but it's on this entire staff. You know, it's on the offensive coordinator. It's on the quarterback coach. You know what I mean? It's on the offensive line coach, Coach Morgan. You know, how can we protect this quarterback? It's on the running backs and the running back coach. You know, how can we establish a running game so that way the pressure's not on Caleb to make every throw or to beat a team with his arm? You know, it's a lot of things that go into it. So all eyes will be on Caleb, right? And Caleb, you know, he understands that if you come here, all eyes are going to be on you. And yes, you do have to be elite as a quarterback. But at the same time, like we talked about, winning the locker room, you're going to have to win over a lot of people because a lot of those people are going to be, you know, directly responsible for the success that you have here, you know, in this Bears organization.
Hey, I'll tell you this. Texas Tech didn't have a lot of great names until Pat Mahomes got there either.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not sitting here worried about it. I think that's such a thing, too, like where people are like, oh, Ohio State's never had a guy, or USC's never had a guy. It's like, you never have one until you do. You know what I mean? Texas Tech didn't have a great NFL quarterback either until Pat Mahomes turned out. Now, all of a sudden, you got the best, arguably the best quarterback of the decade.
Yeah, and it's also the situation, too. Like, yes, Pat Mahomes had a crazy skill set in college, put up crazy amount of stats and stuff like that. But when you get drafted to a team and a head coach like Andy Reid, who has a good track record of developing quarterbacks, you know what I'm saying? Who's had a good success rate in terms of putting quarterbacks in a good situation to help make them successful. Well, that helps even more. Now you have a quarterback that has an elite skill set. You put him on an elite offensive minded coach. Yeah. Where you get elite results. You get Super Bowls, multiple Super Bowls.
Let's hope we get a couple of those Super Bowls. I think after all the time we've been waiting, we deserve at least one, I want two. But at least one. Two, I can beat my chest on. You know what I mean? Two, like, look, I'm going to beat my chest with one. But two, it's like, y'all can't tell me nothing. I'm irritating for the next 60 years of life.
I'm with you, man. I want to get there too, man. And you know, I was a part of a team that they got there and we didn't win it. And it obviously hurts to this day. You know, but, you know, with where we're at now, with the way things have been going the past few years with this Bears organization, man, we gotta win the division. Like, like we gotta win the division. Like, we gotta get a winning record.
You're taking it steps at a time. No, J-Mac, I want the bowl. There
he says, man, win the division, man. First, hold on. Beat Green Bay, first of all. Beat Green Bay. You want to win the division, beat Green Bay.
Yeah.
Win the division, get into the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, we gotta take those steps first. And you know, until we do those things, first of all, until we beat Green Bay, we'll never win the division. So it doesn't, you know.
I think that's so interesting, right? Because, and Tez brought that up. He talked about, right, just talking to some of his guys who are on the Packers. He's like, we got to beat Green Bay. He's like, I'm not losing to them this year. We've heard them kind of be back and forth on this, right? I think the players are starting to realize, some of the players that are getting in here are starting to realize, hey, this rivalry is a little bit bigger than just like, you know, football. This is a little bit bigger than just two teams playing each other. But I do feel like Matt Eberflus every week is just like, hey, man, look, it's another game. Here we go. We're going to do this thing. And then they go out there and they show exactly why it's just another game to them on the field. And that's been pissing me off now for 2 years. But that's a whole different point. Do you think that beating the Packers is something, and this is something that you guys were able to do, and then the next year you go to the Super Bowl, is it just a mental hurdle that sometimes holds your team back? Is it just something about beating that team up north that makes you feel like you can beat anybody in the division, right? And it's a little bit different because they're actually good, and they were very good when you guys were going up against them.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of, you know, you as a player and as a coach, no matter what they say, it's not just another game. You know what I'm saying? That you're going to downplay.
That's not how it looked.
It's not another game. And I think, you know, our team, we did a good job of, when we talked to the media, we didn't say it was another game. It's Green Bay week. You know, even Lovey would say it's Packer week. There's more emphasis. Practices were longer. Practices were more intense because at the end of the day, like, you know, if we could have a bad season, but if you beat Green Bay, like, that made your season, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a matter of, I think, the mental hurdle, and like Montez Sweat talked about, you know, on the Green Live podcast with Chris Long, was he said it. He's like, I'm not losing to Green Bay this year. Like, I'm not losing. And it sucks because, you know, we're in an area, you know, even though we're in the suburbs of Chicago, there's a ton of Green Bay Packers fans around here. You know what I mean? So it's like if you lose to them, it's a constant reminder every day in the offseason that you lost to the Packers, right? You can have the greatest season in the world, but you go into the store and there's a Packers fan and they say, hey, good season, but we still kicked your ass. You know what I'm saying?
You know, like, you know what kills me too? And I'm going to some of the stores on this too. It's so many of them that the stores got Packers jerseys up because they following the money. Hey, absolutely not, dog. Have you been to stores in Wisconsin?
Yeah,
ain't not one Bears jersey in there.
Nah, I love going. So I fly out of Milwaukee sometimes when I have to fly out somewhere, and they always have, you know, the memorabilia store's got all the Packers stuff in there, and I always go in there and take a picture with my middle finger up. You know, and people looking at me crazy, like, oh, he's a Bears fan. but you're right though, man. It's like if like Montez said, like these guys know that. You know, even Montez, like he just got here and he understands the magnitude of this rivalry and what it means to when you're playing the Packers. You know, he said, I'm not losing to Green Bay this year. Like, I'm not losing to him.
Now and, let's do it. But
yeah, I mean, for the guys who have lost and have been in that locker room that have lost year after year after year after year, it's definitely frustrating because, you know, those guys up north, Pat, when the schedule comes out, they look at that schedule and they see the Bears on there. I don't care if it's at Soldier Field or up there at Lambeau. Guess what? When and that's disrespectful, but at the end of the day, that's the way it's been. That's the way it's been. They've beaten us, they've disrespected us, and we have done nothing about it. So I'm glad that you have a guy, you know, in this locker room, but now you have a guy on this defense, and like Montez Sweat said during the interview, like he's in a whole new role. Like he's leading a defense now. But you're leading a defense and you're a part of leading a team that understand the emphasis and the importance of beating that team up north. And that could really catapult your season, man. Like it's important. You know, not only is it a division game and a division opponent or a division rival, but you know, like you said, it's that mental block. It's the rivalry. It means something. So, you know, let's see what happens this year, because every year we talk about it, Pat, this is a year. And guess what? It's the same year of upset, disappointment that we've seen over and over again.
And that's my issue, right? Because words are one thing, right? The word saying it, I get it. Okay. And I get everybody's not from Chicago, but I mean, I think it starts with Flus. I think it starts right. The excitement around this defense, the excitement around Montez, the excitement around what this team is becoming is amazing. I love it. Let's go. I think that we finally have a combination that may be the right combination. But to me, it starts with Flus. The one thing that Lovey never did, Lovey didn't say nothing. He's literally like you. I've re-listened to these press conferences. Nothing was said in 20 minutes of press conference. But he would absolutely go up to this podium and people be like, what are you guys' plans for this week? He's like, y'all know what week it is. Y'all know what we're going to do. Y'all know how we're going to go out there and how we're going to attack. And it's not like y'all were always this overwhelming favorite to go up there and beat Green Bay when Green Bay came in to come down here. But the mentality was there. And that's the one thing for me that, listen, Flus, I love the beard. I love the fade. Wifey got you right. Yeah, you know I mean, we know that's what it is, right? His wife was like, bro, you're the head coach of the Chicago Bears. Get a haircut. Yeah, you know I mean, we know what it is. Look, I'm going to get a cut today. My wife told me the same thing. She'd be like, a little scruffy. I bet. I'm going to go get it lined up.
Get you what you need, man. Get you a DIY. Do it yourself.
Let me go. I'm not there yet, brother. I still got the hairline in there. I'm not there yet. But I implore you to instill it in your players that this ain't just another game. Because when you say on the podium, this is just another game, it's fine if you behind closed doors, like, we got to go kill these dudes now. But then when I see y'all on the field, it looked like you thought it was just another game, and they up 16 games in the division, and they not treating it like it's just another game. They treating it like it's Bears Packers. That's the one thing from last year. There was a lot that infuriated me. But after all of those Packers games, that was the one thing that just infuriated me so much, is we looked like it was just another game. And they looked like, no, this is Bears Packers.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to, you know, a lot of coaches are different. You know, a lot of coaches, they don't like to talk about long-term goals. They like to stay in the moment, you know, week by week, one step at a time. So they won't talk about, we're going to win the Super Bowl, we're going to go to the playoffs. But I'm a coach that believes in speaking things into existence.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you go out there and you're not talking about it, well, then, you know, what are we working for? If you're not reminding your team about what the ultimate goal is, then what are we practicing for? What are we going through training camp for? Like, we're not going through training camp just to have a winning record. Like, That ain't a winning. We're trying to go to the playoffs, right? First of all, we want to beat Green Bay's behind. We want to go to the playoffs, and we're playing for a Super Bowl. Like, nobody plays it. Well, I mean, some guys they play the game for money, different things like this. But at the end of the day, every organization goes in to training camp with one goal in mind, and that's holding up that Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year. That's winning a Super Bowl. And if they tell you different, they're lying. If they tell you different, then they shouldn't be in the position they are, leading an organization, because every GM, he just doesn't want to go and beat his division rival. No, he wants to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, that's the goal. So I just feel like if you're not talking about it, when what type of belief are you giving your players? Like, if I'm not talking about beating Green Bay when we're in the weight room working out, if I'm not talking about beating Green Bay when we're in the meeting rooms, if I'm not talking about we're going to the playoffs this year when we're out there, you know, running conditioning during this offseason workouts, right? If we're not talking about winning the Super Bowl during training camp, if that doesn't lead our meeting, then what are we working for? Like, I would lead my meetings off and say, hey, look here, guys, we're going to win the state championship this year. This is what we're going to do. This is why we're working. Because you got to keep the goal in perspective. You got to let guys know on a daily basis that everything we do has to be at that type of level, right? Every practice, every workout, every sprint, every meeting has to be at a Super Bowl level. Right. The commitment to it, the details has to be at that type of elite level. If not, we're going to fall short of our goal. And if we don't know what our goal is, well, then how do we know how to prepare for it? I don't understand it. Like, if our nutrition staff isn't at a Super Bowl level, our weight program is not at a Super Bowl level, our practice is not at an elite Super Bowl level, then we're going to fall short of what the ultimate goal is. And if you're not reminding your players of what that goal is, then what are we working for?
Yeah, the next day. That's what we hear for Flus every day. We get better the next day. And if you keep getting better and if you build those days together, eventually you'll be better.
Like, yeah, I get it.
But will you be the best?
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
What Kobe say? Then, are you a different animal but the same beast?
Yeah, I get that. Like, yeah, you want to get better each day and you don't want to peak too early. But at the same time, every day that we practice or every day that we set foot at Hallis Hall, like our day has to be at a Super Bowl elite level.
Yeah.
Everything we do has to be at that level. So, yeah. You know, Monday, we're going to be in an elite level. Tuesday, we're going to take it up a notch and we're going to be at a different level, but it's still going to be at an elite level. But let's challenge ourselves to get better, like you said, every day.
More elite,
but
yeah.
Every day has to be at a Super Bowl caliber level.
What was the, because you guys end up going on a great run all the way to the Super Bowl. What were the, I guess, the little things that stood out to you that you felt like led into the bigger things? Because that is the goal, right? Yeah. It is to get to a Super Bowl level. Like, I mean, Ed Reed talked about towels. He was like, y'all can't clean up after yourselves. How are we going to clean up on the field?
Yeah, he's right. He's right. Like, it was the thing that I saw with our team was, and I talk about it over and over again, and you'll hear my teammates talk about this, you know, all the time. It was the accountability we had amongst each other.
Yeah.
Was higher than any coach could put on us, right? So, yeah, at the end of the day, you know, I understand my running back coach is holding us accountable, but my accountability to Thomas Jones, to a Cedric Benson, to an Adrian Peterson, was so much higher than my coach could ever place on me because, like, those were my guys. Those were my brothers. So, you know, when I missed a block for those guys or I didn't make a block, like, I was pissed off with myself because I let them down.
Yeah.
Same thing. Like I talked to Adrian Peterson last night and, you know, we were talking about ball and he was like, man, I can recall like, you know, at times if I didn't make the first person miss, right. Or I felt like I let the offensive line down. I felt like I let you down because you guys are out there, you know, putting yourselves on the line for me and I can't make the one guy miss that I'm supposed to make miss. Or I couldn't run him over for an extra 2 or 3 yards. And, you know, things like that, like I can recall the offensive line, you know, staying after practice, you know, with Olin Krutz and Reuben Brown, and they're getting extra work in. Well, guess what? When those guys are out there doing it, you think any offensive lineman walked past those guys on that sled and walked in that locker room? No, they all stayed out there and they got better together.
Yeah.
You know, when you came in the facility, guess what? You had better been in the weight room because if you didn't, Olin was already in there. Thomas Jones was always in the weight room. He's gonna get mad.
Was
at
in there? Oh, really?
TJ, he'll get mad at me for saying that. He thinks I'm gonna crack a joke on him. But he was always in there. Like he was always in there. Like, and you know, us as running backs, I'm like, man, like I know that I got to get in the weight room because I know T. Jones is in there. You know what I mean? So I got to try to beat him in there, but also I got to try to beat T. Jones. You know, I got to try to beat him to the protein cooler because he's going to take all the protein.
You knew it was coming.
You know, I had to get
you knew
him.
It was coming.
But I'm serious though. That was the type of accountability that we had amongst each other, man. So I think that's what made us, you know, an elite team. And did we have a team full of named players? We had some, but we had a team full of blue collar and role players and they understood what their role was, but they understood that, hey, there was a high level of accountability that was going to make us successful on Sundays. And that would help us reach our ultimate goal. And that was winning the Super Bowl.
And I mean, listen, y'all made it all the way there, end up falling just short. But I mean, I think the part that so many people don't do now is look back at the season that was, look back at, listen, that's a championship level run. It may not have ended in a Super Bowl, but it's 31 other teams that couldn't do that.
Yeah.
like that's really what it comes to. Or 30 other teams, I should say, they couldn't do that. Everybody can't do that. And so there's still something to learn from that. And I look at that season and it was just so different. Like I haven't had a lot to watch in my life as a Bears fan. So I rewatched that season quite a bit. I watched a lot of those games back. And it's like the vibe of that team was it just even rewatching it just felt different. It felt like, oh, there's something about this that we've never seen here, or at least that I had never seen. I wasn't born to see 85. I wasn't old enough to see that team go to the Super Bowl. Yeah, they had a rap song. Y'all should have got something going with that. Maybe that. get Jay-Z on the feature. I don't know.
I was going to say another name. We have him on the feature, man.
Who was we beefing with on the feature? Who was we beefing with?
Jay-Z, man. You got it. Some guy's getting in trouble, man. I don't know.
Oh, hey, yo, whoa. Hey, yeah. No, you.
I thought she was going there, man. I was like, hey. I was about to say, hey, don't say his name.
Not in the locker room.
I was saying, don't say his name.
If you say his name three times, he appears. If I see that man dancing in the background of the locker room videos, bro, that's what's coming this year. You already know some team is going to be losing, and then they're going to get their first win. And you know how every team be hyped, and they like 0-6, and then they're like 1-6, and somebody's going to Photoshop Diddy in the back, bro. You know it's coming. Oh, let's finish it off here, J-Mac. Appreciate y'all for tuning in, showing love. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page. Let's finish it off with our Road to the Draft, brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. There's been a lot about the Chicago Bears top 30 visits that has been talked about over the last couple of weeks here. Now we're starting to see some of these names coming in. There is a lot of wide receivers on this list. My question to you, do the Bears have to address wide receiver this year in the draft, or are you fine going at a different position and maybe waiting until, I mean, listen, you could go mid-season, you could go after the season, next year's draft, whatever it is, to possibly add more to this wide receiver room?
Yeah, I'm going to say, you know, we talked about this last week, and I'm going to say you have to address it in this draft. I'm not saying you have to address it with number nine. You know, yes. I feel like, you know, you heard my stance on the last week. I think O or D-line is the way you need to go, more so O-line, just because I still feel like you still need to give this offense help. And you placed a heavy emphasis, you know, on defense with this team. You brought in Sweat. You brought in Edwards. You brought in Tremaine Edmonds. You drafted two rookie corners. You extended Jalen Johnson. Now it's time to work on the offensive side of the ball. So with the number nine pick, I would take an offensive lineman. But also with how many picks we got? Four, right? With
four picks this year, yeah.
Four picks and a lot of receiver depth in this draft. So then I would work on, after I drafted my lineman at nine, you know, possibly seeing what receivers are out there, what receiver fits, and bring another young receiver in. Because when you look at it like this, you got DJ Moore, you got Keenan Allen, who's older, even though he's still coming off his best year. And then you have Tyler Scott, who's your number three, going into a second year, who you hope would take a next step in terms of his development, in terms of his playmaking ability. But then after that, it's like, who do you have? You have Bayless Jones, you have Nsemu Webster, you brought back Dante Pettis. You know, I think you need to create more competition, you know, in that receiver room, because you know who one and two is, DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. Yeah. You know, who's the rest of the guys? You don't know. So, you know, definitely, I think you have to address it in this draft. I'm not saying that you have to do it at nine, but I think it's something that definitely has to be addressed.
Would you like to see a trade back possibly in that scenario where you're going maybe late first round, you're able to get somebody? We heard Jackson Powers Johnson is somebody that is going to be coming in for a top 30 visit with the Bears. Yeah. And I said this the other day, these aren't smoke screens. The Bears are really trying to see these dudes to see if they want to draft them. This is not smoke screen. I saw my guy said this. He was like, what if this is a smoke screen? I was like, you're not wasting a top 30 visit to try and fake somebody out and make you think that you're moving up for MSJ. But, right, like maybe you take a Jackson Powers Johnson early second, late first, and you get a late first in there, early second, something where you're not getting an elite wide receiver, maybe, or you're not getting one of the best names that are on the board right now. I shouldn't say, because you don't know who's going to be elite, who's not, but you're getting maybe one of the other guys, one of the Keon Johnsons in there, or, you know, Xavier Worthy maybe late, and you try and get Jackson Powers in the second, right? Would you rather see the Bears trade back to try and add more here?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. If at nine there's not a guy that you've coveted the whole time, if there's not a guy, I think
there will be. There's a lot of guys.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you have a guy at nine who you're like, hey, we wanted this guy to begin with, he's at nine. Well, I say you don't mess around and you get your guy. Mm. You know what I mean? But at the same time, you talk about the receivers, you know, yeah, you may not get like one of the top guys, right? One of the big names in this draft. But I'm looking at it from a standpoint of what receiver is out there that can help us do what we're going to ask them to do within our offense. You know what I'm saying? So that's where, you know, Coach Waldron comes in, and Kerry Joseph and that offense staff comes in and says, you know what, like, our third receiver has to be able to do this. We need him to do this. So then I've got to go out there and I've got to look at my all my evaluations of the receiver that's left on the board, you know, with in terms of where we're picking at, who can excel at what we want him to do this year, or what we want him to do within his offense. And then you make your determination of that. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it may not be a Marvin Harrison Jr. or a Romo Dunze or a Malik Nabers, but at the same time, there's a lot of guys. There's Pearsall from Florida. There's, you know, the kid from Georgia who may be off the board. But what receivers are left that have the ability to do what you're going to require them to do within this offense? And then you make your pick based upon that. Like, that's how they break things down. So, you know, if there's a guy in later rounds that you can get a receiver that can help you with what you want them to help you with, well, then, hey, you make your pick there. But, you know, to your point, I definitely do think you have to draft the receiver. I'm just not saying you have to draft him at nine. But, hey, it polls to show if there's a guy at nine and you've had him on your board and that little piece of paper says Romo Dunze, no matter what, like we saw on the show, draft day, hey, polls, it's your show. Draft Dunze, I'll still be happy. But at the same time, you know, I'm a couch GM. I want to go offensive line because, you know, that's something that we neglect. You know, it starts up front on both sides of the ball. We've worked on the defensive side of the ball. Now let's work on the offensive side of the ball. But he's the GM. I'm not.
Yeah. I think that's what makes this interesting, right? You almost can go – most times you're going best available versus need. Mm-hmm. But I think that you could make a case for trading back. And, yeah, maybe you're not getting the best available at nine, but you're getting the best available at 13 or 15 or 17. And it's just a more palatable place for you to take a center, whatever the different wide receiver is, because it puts you in a position to get the best available later in the draft versus just getting the best player available. I think that, and I've said this so many times, there's so many options with the Bears this year that I'm like, I've got my preference. I would go all offense. I would try and add to this offensive line. I agree with you there. But if he went out at nine and he's like, Roma Dunze is there. We took Roma Dunze. I had Caleb Williams, Roma Dunze. We made a ton of offseason moves. I feel good about it. If he goes, Jared Verse was there. I couldn't risk him falling and somebody taking him. So we took Jared Verse nine. Hey, man, listen, Jared Verse, great guy coming off the edge. What I'm going to be mad about? I got Caleb Williams one, Jared Verse. Not like is there a situation? I think I asked you this last week. I don't know if we actually broke it down. Is there a move he could make that makes you upset? Like, you're like, that was the wrong move.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. I don't even remember what we said last week, but
I think we just talked about the situation. I don't think we said like if he went a specific, like I ain't gonna lie, you draft a running back in the first round. I'm flipping
that's
the
table. That's what I'm saying. Like something crazy. Yeah, like something crazy like that. You know what I'm saying?
A first round safety. I'm probably flipping the table. I'm not gonna lie.
Something like that, but or if you draft like a linebacker at nine, I'm a pull. I ain't got no hair, so I'm gonna pull my scalp out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you gotta go beard. You gotta go be like,
pack that on my beard or something. So, yeah, like even if he was a draft like a safety at that, you know, like come on, dude, what you doing, man? Like, but that ain't gonna happen. You know, I think that you can't go wrong either way. And we've talked about it. It's so good as a Bears fan and us being close to this organization that we're in a situation even this year with. And we got Montez Sweat and DJ Moore last year. And we come back. We got the first overall pick and the ninth pick. Like, I mean, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. You know what I mean? The way that we're set up right now. So, you know, either way, at number nine, receiver, O-lineman, D-lineman, I'm happy with it. I have my preference. I'm happy with it. So we'll see what if you trade it and you get a highly coveted player that you're looking at the whole time.
Yeah.
And you get more, then we're good. But we're just set up in such good position to continue to help this team be successful. And that's all we wanted was, you know, for this team to be competitors. And I think, you know, since Ryan Poles has taken the job, he's done a great job. Because you look at the first year, man, like that roster. And I always look back at that first year, the roster that we had. Like, it was like, man, like wow. Like, that's who we had. And you look at it from last year, how much he transformed that roster in 1 year. And then how much different it's going to look next year. Like he's done a great job in my opinion so far.
Yeah. I've been looking at all these mock drafts. I've been trying to find one that I'm like, nah, that's not the right move. Like even PFF's here, they trade back. They got the Bears get 13, 77, 112 and a fourth round pick for next year from the Raiders. Mm-hmm. They take Jazan Newton. at 13. All right, bet. Now I know I got depth at that defensive interior. Yeah. Now I know we're putting some dogs on the field. Javon Baker, 75th. Bet. You know what I mean? All right, I'm not mad at this at all. Austin Booker out of Kansas is my edge rusher at 77. Oh, okay. So we're fixing everything. Like the opportunities are endless. The options are endless. And I think that's the best part about the way that Ryan Poles has built this is it doesn't feel like our backs against the wall with anything. This is not a Ryan Pace draft where it's like, hey, we get fired tomorrow if we don't figure out the quarterback position. We don't have an offensive line, Ryan. Shut up. Right, we're taking a quarterback.
Right. Yeah, let's see what he does, man. This is exciting. It's so close, man. It's so close. As you know, we've been talking about this forever. And, you know, it's going to be exciting to see what happens. At least we know who's going to be at number one. So there will be a new quarterback. I'm actually looking forward to actually speaking with this quarterback after every game. You know, whoever it is.
All right. With the air quotes on it. Taz like, nah, let me stop playing if I get a phone call. You already said it, nah. Like,
whoever this quarterback is, I'm looking forward to building a relationship with them and you know, talking to them, you know, after these games. Hopefully after all these wins, man. I'm gonna be excited with them. I don't know how I'm gonna interview them because I'm gonna be so excited. You know, like interviewing him, like
we'll be talking to him after the game. Caleb, how you do that?
Yeah, how you do that? Hey, forget I'm interviewing Caleb. Let's go!
Right. I ain't gonna lie, that would be fire for an interview. hey, y'all gotta tune in on ESPN 1000 for the post game after the game. J Mac always get the interview with the quarterback. Last year it was Justin Fields. Man, I'm telling you, you would be surprised that you get this Jason McKee here versus that. He'd be here with the quarterback of the Chicago Bears right now, Caleb Williams. Caleb, what are your thoughts on what you did in that third quarter play right there with it? I mean, who is this dude? He know how you want to talk to Caleb right now. Hey, bro, what's going on? Hey, how you do that? How did you make that play?
Yeah, man. Hey, but to Justin though, Justin was always. He was always great because, you know, with the amount of adversity he was facing and it was some of them losses, man. Like, I knew he didn't want to talk. And, you know, I could hear his demeanor. He always talked. He always looked for me. He always answered the hard questions. You know, as a former player, I didn't want to ask him, like, why did you throw that interception? But I asked him. You know what I mean? And he would answer it. He was honest, too. And he would always give me more than you know, what I thought. Like, a lot of people would give like a short 2-3 minute interview. You saw we'd be on it for like 10 minutes sometimes. Yeah. So, you know, shout out to him. You know, I hope he does great things at Pittsburgh. You know, I'm a Russell Wilson fan as well. But, Russ, I want you to sit the bench because I'm more of a Justin Fields fan. So I'm excited to see, you know, what he can do up there in Pittsburgh as well. And I'm also excited to see whatever quarterback we have here next year. I'm excited to interview him post game.
I'm a beast mode fan. So, you know, hey, Russ, good job getting carried to that Super Bowl, man.
Listen, I
don't fool with Russ like that. They picked him over my boy. I mean, you're supposed to, but I ain't like it. Appreciate y'all for tuning in, showing love. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. So much more coming for you this week. For J-Mac, I'm Pat the Designer, back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down, one love. Peace.